And we're live.
So funny. I like am compelled to do that. We should like figure out why I'm so compelled to do that. Because the whole thing is that's for lining up
video and audio.
Yeah.
Or multiple audio sources.
Yeah.
Well, that aren't fed into the one.
Yeah. So, okay. Today we're talking about validation. So last time we talked about, is everyone an innovator? Who's innovators? Like what are the different roles in society? And we kind of talked about just getting those innovative juices flowing to try to come up with new things. And then this one's actually pretty important to me. It's the whole validation process. Is this actually a good idea that I'm pursuing? Is this a problem in search of a solution? Or is it like something that really is going to make a huge difference in people's life? And what's interesting is most people quit on validation before they even start. You know, maybe it's uncomfortable. Means putting your precious idea in front of strangers who might tear it apart. But the truth is that for every hour you avoid validation, it's you're wasting time building something that potentially nobody else wants. And I've actually seen these accelerator programs. I don't know if you're familiar with how they work, but they'll give you, you know, you pitch your idea and then they give you money to pursue your idea. And I've seen those, I've seen really awkward situations in those where someone had a great pitch. They got this idea out there. They get $150,000 to go build it. And $20,000 into building it, they realize this is not something people care about. So what do you do at that point? You've got $150,000 in the bank, or you know, $120,000, whatever it is. And almost all of them that I've seen reach that conclusion just keep pushing. Mm. And they're like, we're going to figure it out, right? We're going to like, we're going to pivot into the right model, right? And most of them probably won't because they started off on a bad assumption. I mean, if they keep pivoting, obviously, maybe they pivot into something completely different and they could, but it's a really, really inefficient use of capital. And it's like this double-edged sword because it's like innovation is so important for our society, but we're giving money to people to go down the wrong path. So this is capital that could have gone to a good idea, and someone's going to waste, or a team is going to waste a year of their life going after this thing. So it's actually, it's a very important thing, and I'm just curious why more people don't spend time validating their idea before they start building. I gave some typical reasons here, but like, what do you think is the most common or biggest reason why people would just start building without validating?
Well, like these people you're talking about in the accelerators, do they even know that that's a thing? Do you think they're educated enough to know that that should be their first step? Or they're just like, I want to be an entrepreneur. I have an idea. This sounds fun. You know, and they don't get told to do that?
No, I think most of them do. Okay. I mean, when they make it into the accelerator program, they've been asked the questions about, okay, so what have you done to validate this? And, oh, yeah, everyone loves it, right? And people tend to overinflate. Hey, have you done market research? Have you seen... Have people tested your tool? Do you have any key leading indicator? Oh, yeah, everyone loves it, right? They've got to say that because they're trying to sell their thing. But overselling it is basically maybe you're risking spending the next year of your life going down a rabbit hole that you shouldn't go down. So I'm just curious, why is it that people... It could be education, you're right. Maybe they don't know, but I think enough of them know, but they do it anyway.
I can think of a few different. One would be fear. I've invested myself so much into this thing. I identify my identity's tied up in this thing that if I put it out there before people, if people shoot it down, then I have to face the reality that maybe it's not such a good idea. That's one. Another could be that you think that they just don't understand. And it took a long time for me to get to this place to understand this thing and to accomplish this thing. And if other people saw it, what I saw, they'd know that this is going to change the world. And you want some people like that. And part of it's delusional, like, well, you know, Edison, he had an idea and people thought he was a crazy man. And so-and-so had an idea and they thought he was a crazy man. And so you just keep going forward thinking, well, eventually I'll win. So it could be delusion. It could be just hyper-confidence, and it could be fear. But I think that's where the challenge is. Like the people who really are going to make the major innovations have to have some sort of drive to go through whatever the barriers are. But being wise enough to figure out, is this a barrier to go through, or do I have to pick another path? Like that's the challenge, I suppose, for validation.
Yeah.
I suppose it probably also feels like getting your idea validated isn't really doing anything. You know, you're not really building something. You're just like talking to people or whatever. Like, it's not really what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what they want to do is they want to make something because they're creative and they're entrepreneurial. And that feels sort of like, what am I doing? I'm doing nothing. I'm kind of wasting my time here.
Yeah. And it honestly, when you're asking someone to kind of look at your idea and help you validate it, it kind of feels like you're trying to get them to like join a timeshare presentation or something. It's like, it doesn't like, they're not getting value out of it. It's like you're asking someone to like help you move every weekend. It kind of feels like a little bit weird, right?
And I think part of that is the crossover between validation and affirmation,
mm-hmm.
where I'm seeking affirmation. I want people to pat me on the back. And initial iterations, who are the people around you? You're not running it through strangers' filters. You're running through your mom and your dad and your sister and your cousin and your next-door neighbor and your best friend. And there's a certain amount of, well, this could be better, but wow, you're doing a great job. This is great. And so early on, all of the validation, all the affirmation is for the positive. And then I think that's part of it too. The fear of not gaining the affirmation where you don't separate yourself from the product or whatever the thing is you're innovating.
Yeah. And I think maybe they think they have validated it because they've talked to their family and their friends and their cousin and all that. And they've all been, yeah, cause that's what they're always going to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great idea. Love it. I think you should do it. And so they're like, hey, I did validate it, you know,
or
whatever.
A couple of key points for me there. You know, one, I think what you guys are saying, and it rings true with me, is you got to detach yourself from your idea. The way that I always say it when I'm, you know, coaching a new entrepreneur is fall in love with the problem, not your solution. Because if you fall in love with your solution, you're not going to listen to the feedback or you're not going to listen to the validation. You really should be agnostic to it, treating it like this is an experiment. This is one iterative step in trying to find a solution to this problem that I really care deeply about. And so if you're more invested in understanding the problem and agnostic to the solution, I think that that's a huge step in the right direction. And then also portraying it that way when you're doing the validation, because I think you're right too. It's like you go to someone and say, hey, I've been working on this for the last 3 years and, you know, I've put my life savings in this and this is, you know, I think this is going to be the next big thing. What do you think? You know, if you pitch it that way, people are like, yeah, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't want to tell you your baby's ugly, right?
Yeah.
So you really got to frame it in a way where it's like, hey, I've got this thing I'm thinking about. This is the problem. I think a lot of people do have this problem and this is a possible solution, but I don't want to go down this path if this is going to not really solve it and I'll waste a ton of time. Do you think I probably would be wasting time if I went down this path? You're almost giving them permission to say, you almost want to bias it towards them saying, this is stupid. Because then if they say, no, actually, that's good, that makes sense, then you can trust it a little bit better.
Yeah. When you're talking about falling in love with the problem and not the solution, your solution, I think that's a great direction to go. You hear the stories of somebody who is solving one problem and it doesn't solve, they're coming up with something, a tool, a medication or something to solve one problem, and it doesn't. But then they realize that it solves a problem they weren't even trying to solve. And so at that time, you've got to pivot too. You got to think. It's kind of like the stories of 3M where they said, come up with this certain kind of a sticky thing. And, and they came up with Post-it notes. Like they weren't trying to solve the Post-it note problem of nobody having one, but then they did. But just the flexibility and the open-mindedness to recognize that whatever you came up with might still be a valid thing for humanity. It just might not have been what you were thinking of.
It's really interesting that you brought that example up. Literally last night I was building a pitch deck and about why small businesses should have innovation budget. And one of the examples it gave was that 3M spun up this product or program with their employees where they're like, I think it was 15% of their time was supposed to be just tinkering on something that they wanted to do. Like nothing to do with work, just this hour of work is just go do something fun or interesting for yourself. And that's where Post-it notes came from. Also, Google had that, but they said 20% of your time. And that's where Gmail came from and AdSense, which are two of their biggest products. So,
And then government said, use 80% of your time to do whatever you want. And
then yeah.
So on the validation thing, is it clear to these people what that process is? Like, you need to get 50 people that you don't know, you know, or something like that. Or also, I wonder why don't the accelerators, if I was running an accelerator, I might be like, okay, well, we need a team of people that go out and try to validate these ideas so we don't waste our money on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
Not necessarily leave it up to the entrepreneur because you know he's not going to do it.
It's crazy to me. It really is. And I've been a part. I won't name them, but I was a part of an accelerator where my cohort that went through, I would say half of the companies just didn't have a validated idea, right? And then I also was part of a pretty prominent pitch competition. It was actually South by Southwest, right? So I got to pitch on stage there, and it was actually a really fun process to go through. But what was interesting is there was like six companies that made it and got to pitch, but they were super, super strict. They wanted these pitches to be on point. So they had six other startups that didn't make it that they also gave tickets to and invited them out to the show as alternates. And like literally they let us all know like, hey, if your pitch is not on point and you're not hitting these target metrics, we've got six other companies that are ready to take your spot, right? And so they felt bad and they're like, okay, these other six companies, they're going to let them do a 1 minute little elevator pitch, boom, 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 one right after another. And I think five out of those six, I'm like, they're better than my company. They're better than my company. Mm-hmm. Why did I make it through? It's like the validation process for even these huge things. It's like, it's almost like they stick their interns like, hey, here's a rubric. Go through all these startups. And it's like an afterthought, which is really weird to me. But I do have one friend who he ran one of the famous Ivy League schools accelerators. He ran it for about 10 years and he left specifically to start a venture fund that only cared about validation. They didn't even look at the startup's solution. They didn't care. And it was interesting to me because he was telling me, he's like, yeah, we don't even evaluate their solution. The only thing that we care about is, do they have a group of early adopter supporters that they can get quick feedback from and incorporate that feedback into their building process? That's the only thing we care about because, from his perspective, he had noticed the same problem that we're talking about is that there's this massive, like, black hole of everyone understands, to your point, Justin, everyone understands like validation, you're supposed to validate, but everyone's just kind of like coming up with talk tracks around, oh yeah, I validated. Oh yeah, they validated. Okay. It's just like this, it's not data driven. There's no controls or I don't know what the right word is, but like checks and balances around it. It's just everyone's kind of feeling it out.
I didn't have a label for what you're calling validation, but when I've watched Shark Tank, you know, that's built in to a certain extent because they'll ask things like, how much is your revenue? What's your repeat business base? That sort of mm-hmm. thing. And sometimes, you know, we've sold 10 and others are like, we've sold 10 million. And so I know that I didn't realize that's part of what they were doing, but the sharks were asking.
They're trying to get at validation through like
validation.
A, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's some interesting questions. So imagine, where was this here? Okay, imagine if Henry Ford, you know, his famous thing, he went out and tried to validate and everyone said, no, we just want faster buggies.
Yeah.
So if he had listened to this validation, he wouldn't have built a car, right? So what's the trade-off there, and how do you, because on one end of the spectrum, you have, and I could make a case for this, that as the entrepreneur, you shouldn't even be the one coming up with the solution. You should be interviewing people that have the problem, understanding their needs, and then letting their ideas be the basis for the solution. That's one way to think about it. I could make a case for that, and then someone would come along and say, well, what about Henry Ford? And then I can make a case for, on the other end, okay, it's cool to get this feedback, but like innovators are people who can make connections that others can't see with the feedback. So where does that like land? Like, do you, like, I don't know that there's an answer there, but do you, either of you have thoughts on how you would approach getting feedback, and then do you listen to it? Do you throw it out the window?
Well, I think there's, I don't know how to call it, because there's probably a name for it, because smarter people have thought about this a lot longer than I have, but levels of innovation. There's levels of innovation within the current infrastructure of society. So if I am creating a new toaster and it plugs into the old outlet, okay, everybody knows how to use a toaster. Everyone knows how to use an outlet. It's not a major innovation. It might do something great, but it already fits the infrastructure. If you're creating a car and you've got mostly dirt roads and these tires are narrow and it rains, like all of a sudden you're creating something that might not work well in the current infrastructure. There's not gas stations. So what are you going to do? Like all of these problems, you have to build an infrastructure. So he could probably see this is going to change the world, but you've got all this infrastructure too. So my understanding is he also helped fund roads and some other things to make it possible. And think about personal computers. When they first started coming out, there's not really a world built around the usage of personal computers. So you almost have to build a new infrastructure. So that's really high level stuff. So I think that addresses a little bit. What do you do? Well, if it's going to be a major giant disruptor, like AI, like that's a major disruptor. But people were already familiar with using their computers, so there's some interface already. So what does it make sense?
Like, yeah.
So I think that's part of it. I wonder how many of the giant major innovations were the innovators, multiple or individual, are thinking so big. Yeah, I know that it has problems, but if we are able to adapt this, it's going to be crazy different. And they still push forward, whereas others, you know, it's not as hard to change, not to plug into what already exists.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think that, you know, there are these exceptions, basically, is what those, I would call those people.
Yeah.
So like Edison, light bulb, but nobody had electricity in their house, you know, so like then he had to go and make sure that people would get electricity and all that so they could use his products. But, so I don't think that that's what most people are doing, though. you know, like most entrepreneurs are not doing things on that kind of scale. You know, they're trying to find this one niche thing, this problem, and then solve it. So I think that for them, the validation is a lot more useful and then some kind of world-changing technology.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're talking to people about a smartphone in 2000, they're not really going to know what you're talking about because they don't even have a cell phone, you know, whatever. So you're not going to get any validation. It's going to be pretty much impossible because they don't even know what you're talking about.
Here's what I think. I think even like in... Feel free to push back on this, but I think even people like Edison or like even Tesla or, you know, some of these great innovators that were doing amazing things, I still think that their ideas were validated through... Here's what I think. I think people are experts in their pain, what their pain points are. I think you can get really good information about what their pain points are. I think they're not so good at coming up with the solutions. But I still think it's important to ask them, you know, after you've done some discovery about their pain, like why is this, you know, what is the pain here? What do you think the solution is? I think it's still interesting to ask them the solution. And then you have to ask enough whys, like, okay, well, why would this be the solution? Why? And like really get down to the core motivation for discovering the true underlying pain points. And I think if you do that, I think these great innovators like that invent like the light bulb and things like that, they've seen deeper, like maybe four if clauses deep, or like they've been able to see, okay, this is going to be transformative, but it's going to be solving these core problems that all these people are having, and it's going to do it in a more elegant way. And I think they're just, I think these people that are just on another level are just able to see deeper motivations and see, like, they're able to hold more in their head, potentially. Would you guys push back on that? Like, I think they're still validated things. They've just done it on a deeper level, and maybe just intuitively they were able to do it.
I'd agree. I think that there's some level where they have to come to grips with the fact that others won't be able to see what they see, and that's okay. And so I'm going to push ahead anyway, because I know based on the description that they've given of their pain and what the solution would look like, they don't know how to get there, but what a solution might look like. Like, what I really need is a candle that will burn brighter during the night. So what do they need? Yeah. They need bright light during the night.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so he's thinking, okay, your problem isn't a candle. That's not your solution. So he's coming up with a different solution, even though they're identifying it. But I also think this is where perhaps things like government or science research might come in, where somebody might be studying nuclear stuff just because that's their passion, their interest, they're funded, and they're not the ones coming up with the end solution of what this is going to do, but they're trying to figure out, how do we tame it? How do we control it? How do we, you know, whatever, how do we get as much out of as little input as possible? They're not trying to figure out how to tap it into the grid, but they just love what they're doing. And then it takes somebody else who's the innovator to come along and go, we're going to take this thing, and if we do this, we can use it in this way. And that's where I think the business partners with, it might not be financially feasible for a company to do the research, but it might be financially feasible for them to take it and tap it into the dollar network.
So to distill that down, you're basically saying when things get really big, those are problems that you trust your government to solve for you.
You said trust. They might be more capable because of the trust. I don't know. Yeah, let's put all the power into their hands.
Yeah, sounds great. They're so good at solving big problems.
Yes, and creating bigger ones. But there is a certain level of that.
Yeah.
It's beyond any one company to be able to do this, and it's not going to pay off in a short term, and so no company's going to invest in it. But
Yeah, I think there is, you know, when it gets that abstract, it's like, okay, well, we need a cure for this thing, and the maybe the cure is not going to be a product that's going to be super profitable, and people wouldn't pursue it that way. But then a government or some sort of societal structure could understand that, okay, this is going to be good for society, and a rising tide lifts all ships. No, I understand. You trust the government. Yeah.
Well, I think what's interesting about the two examples we're talking about, Ford and Edison, is that they kind of improved on ideas that were already there, that people were already using as well. So, like, there already was a horse and a buggy.
Yeah.
He basically motorized a buggy.
Mm-hmm.
So he just took the horse out of it and he put a motor
on
there.
Yeah, it's a different engine.
You know, yeah, just a different source of power.
Yeah.
And Edison, there were, you know, people were already using candles and they had propane lights and stuff.
Just a different fuel source.
Yeah. So they, you know, that was a major part, I think, of it. They didn't create something didn't exist whatsoever and then try to sell that to a market. They improved the people's current choices, you know, to something that was more efficient, more effective, you know, longer lasting, more reliable, all those kinds of things too. So, and don't you think though, I mean, for every Edison, there's probably 10,000 people who try to do it and fail, right? Yeah. So they're very exceptional. What would you say would be a safer path for entrepreneurs rather than trying something so world changing, you know, big idea like that, that would be more likely to succeed? Or do you think that it doesn't matter?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I do, when I'm coaching entrepreneurs, it's like, okay, this is a great idea. And I made a mistake with this. Like I had a company that had a great idea and it, you know, clearly would be a great product market fit, but it would require, you know, a direct integration to the Federal Reserve. And it would require like multiple financial institutions to buy into this and take a bet on it, when big institutions typically are not the ones that take those big innovative leaps, because they've already got a good thing going and they're run by people that have loss aversion, where they're like, if I stick my neck out and this succeeds, yeah, that's great for me, but the chances are it fails. And then my career's down the tubes that I championed this thing, right? So it's usually the smaller institutions that would champion things like those sorts of moonshot ideas. So to your point, if you've got millions of dollars in the bank and you've got basically an unlimited runway, yeah, go after one of these moonshot ideas. But there's enough low-hanging fruit. Like, start a business drop shipping something on Amazon that requires no money. Make your millions and then start going after the moonshot ideas. I totally agree with that. So I want to segue here. I mean, this has been a great discussion, but the whole point of what I'm trying to figure out here is, how can we create an environment, right? Like, how can you do, instead of saying at the end of this, okay, everyone, go out there and validate your ideas and just have enough willpower to actually start validating your ideas correctly, what are some interesting things that we could do in the environment to create an environment that would nudge you to naturally start doing some of these things better? So AI has some ideas. I think these are going to be, I haven't even looked at these yet. I think AI sometimes is silly on these, but I think it's fun to look at it. So behavioral biases you can leverage for yourself to get yourself to do more validation. Commitment bias. I think a lot of these are going to come up a lot. Like, commitment bias is a big one for creating an environment. So this is, you know, once you've committed publicly, I'm going to validate this idea with 50 people I don't know, and you've publicly said that, then you kind of feel like you have to do that. So announce a hard rule. I'm not allowed to build until I have 20 validation conversations.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. Share this publicly, social media, friends, mastermind group. Yeah, I think that'd be good if you had a mastermind group where you said, okay, I'm going to do this. Another one that it came up with is a sunk cost effect. We stick with things we're invested in. Maybe prepay for accountability. Give a friend $100. You only get it back when you've hit your 20 interviews. You can give me the 100.
I volunteered to be that person. Let's start an app that I'm the guy that you give $100 to. Until
give me $100. I'll give it back once you've done 20 Elon interviews. Right? Let's do 1,000. That's better.
Yeah. A little more.
That's similar. It is sunk cost effect, but that's similar to the commitment bias. Default bias, people stick with whatever's easiest, already set up. So block recurring calendar slots titled validation conversation. So like say, okay, for this hour every week, it's just validation. Like that's all I'm going to work on. So I can sit there and do nothing, or I can like start trying to make progress on validation. You could do, figure out how to automate outreach, use a tool to schedule 3 to 5 conversations per week, create a template message that you can copy and paste asking for validation. Loss aversion. We fear losses more than we value equivalent gains. So this is similar to, you know, last time set up a validation jar with $20 in it. Every week you fail to get at least 3 interviews, you burn 5, give it away, donate it or lose it, burn it. Frame validation as time saved. This one's kind of interesting. So basically what it's saying is like, I'm going to end up wasting 1,000 hours likely building something. But if I can do these validation interviews, it's like 50 hours less wasted per interview or something. And then you can like see this time go down. Mm-hmm. So those are some of their ideas. I don't know, like, is there, like, based on this conversation, if we're just kind of trying to brainstorm, I wonder, like, what you could do in your environment to create an environment where you're more likely to get this validation.
Well, one of the things that came to mind is something that Justin was talking about, and the idea of do they know what validation is. And I know what it is in general, but if you told me, go and validate your idea with 20 people, I don't know what you mean. Mm-hmm. So part of it could be something like, if Justin does know what it is, and I say, Justin, teach me how to do that, and then I'm going to come back to you and tell you how it went, and you can help me tweak what I did. So now I'm educated, but I'm also being held accountable from somebody who knows what it is. And my goal is not just to validate my idea, but to become a better validator. So then I've shifted the goal away from the thing that I'm maybe personally invested in as the product, and I'm shifting kind of doubling up a different goal if I want to improve myself and my process. It's kind of like the work on your business, not just in your business. So mm-hmm. So that's not really an environment thing, except it's leveraging somebody else's education, approval, whatever it might be, to, because I don't, if you said go do it, I don't know what I'd do.
Yeah.
Except here's my product. What do you think? Like, well, that's about all I
that feeds into, you know, one of my ideas is to teach other people how to validate and why it's important. I think that that's a big one I've noticed in my life, because like when I'm coaching these other entrepreneurs, hey, like you shouldn't be building right now. Like you should be validating, because you could be heading down the wrong. What if you built this and you can't get anyone to buy it? Then what? Are you going to feel good about your time? No. Well, let's see if people actually want this before we spend time building it.
So when you're teaching people, you become more likely to do it on your own?
Absolutely. Yeah, because if I'm going around telling other people that, someone explained it to me this way, that like you think of your mind as like a three-legged stool, where you have one leg of the stool is beliefs, one leg is the information, and one leg is your actions. And all three of those need to be in alignment. And I've seen that in my life. I think it's true. It's like if my beliefs are out of alignment with my actions, you have some cognitive dissonance. You don't feel good, right? If everyone's telling you, like when I grew up in a religion and people were always telling me, oh, your religion's fake, your religion's wrong, right? And ultimately, I left that religion. But, you know, when you're getting this information, it's like, okay, this information is in conflict with my beliefs and it's in conflict with my actions. And so I either have a choice of stopping to pay attention to this information, discarding this information, and going and seeking out information that does confirm my beliefs and my actions, or I can take in that information, say, maybe I'm going to change my beliefs based off of this information, made the action, right? And so I think in a similar way, if I'm going out there putting out this information and I've got a belief and I'm, you know, constantly consuming and disseminating information about this belief, my actions kind of have to come into alignment with that, and I have to do it. So I think one of the strongest ones is, for me, is going out and teaching. So I'll teach you how to validate your next idea.
Well, that's kind of an interesting point you make with everything you were just saying there. I was thinking about it in terms of an entrepreneur going out and validating their idea. Like, they already have their beliefs about mm-hmm. the idea, so they don't really want to hear anybody be opposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so also when I hear the term validate, it sounds more like you're looking for people who will tell you that it's a good product,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, so that's kind of, they're going to rig kind of it already. So it's sort of like when somebody says we got to validate their feelings, right?
Yeah.
Usually they're like, that's good. You're okay. You're whatever, you know, it's okay that you feel that way. Like, that's validating. And so it kind of strikes me as, people would be going out and even the feedback they do get wouldn't necessarily be that useful, because it would be, they would only be trying to seek people who would agree with them already with their beliefs.
Yeah. I think that's why it's so important to help people shift their mindset away from their idea. And like, I saw a really interesting documentary. And in part of the documentary, it was a behavioral psychology documentary. And in part of it, they were showing interview footage of these people that were working on the, I can't remember, I'm going to butcher the name, but it was like a particle accelerator, like the Hydron particle.
The CERN and that giant.
Yeah, the huge one. And they were super excited. It was all these scientists that were building this particle accelerator, and they were going to see if, like, they were going to collide these two particles together, and they're going to see if it destroyed the universe or not. Mm-hmm. And they were super excited, right? Nobody knew what was going to happen. Like, literally, it destroying the universe was like one of the potential outcomes, right?
It's on the list.
Yeah, it was on the list.
Nobody will care tomorrow.
But the scientists, the reason why they were showing these clips is these scientists were, they all clearly had this outcome that they wanted to see, right? But they were very, very careful to be like, well, you know, it's probably not going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. If it doesn't happen, that's okay. And here's why it would be okay if it doesn't happen. And like, they were like trying to convince themselves like they're okay with it not happening, and like trying to bias themselves against the thing that they really wanted so that they didn't fall victim to confirmation bias. And it was really interesting to see him doing that. And I think it's a smart thing to do. And I think that that's kind of goes in line with what we're talking about here. You should be trying to disprove your idea, and your, if you do have some sort of identity connection to this whole thing, it should be to the problem. And you should be agnostic to the solution and just be treating the solution as like, oh, this is one experiment and there's probably, this is one of 1,000. I think that's a great idea. Like, this is iteration 1 of 1,000, and I need to get to 1,000, or maybe 1,000's too much, 1 of 50. And so I know I'm going to change this. I'm going to change it 50 times, and sometimes it's going to be a meaningful change. Any other kind of closing thoughts here? Like the whole, I mean, this has been a great discussion for me. And so I want to distill this down into some key takeaways, and I've gotten some great ones. Around creating an environment. Yeah.
One of the things that really strikes me, and I think it's helpful and it's also a challenge, is that with a three-legged stool of the beliefs, actions, and information, the people that you're asking, what do you think about this solution to this problem, they don't have your background of beliefs. They don't have your background of information from all the experience and thoughts that you've put into it. And at first I thought, well, that's not good, because then they don't have that to stand on. But then I thought, well, maybe that's the best, because all they have to go on is, if I take this action, how will it affect my life? They're not maybe thinking about the other things that influenced you to get there. So if they're just looking at that, then maybe they're more apt to give you clear, honest feedback. You still have to understand that they don't know the things you don't know. So what do I do with that? Well, I think I don't. One of the actions is that I go into the conversation not trying to convince them that my thing is the best. It's just to let them interact with it. So I don't know how that is as far as creating my environment, except that it might shape the way that I set up interviews. And I might intentionally set them up with people I don't know, so they don't have, the relational bias or whatever it might be.
I mean, my biggest insight is, I think people could, because this concept, like you were saying, Justin, not a lot of people understand it enough. Like, they know they're supposed to validate, but that's just like, to a lot of people, validating is like talking to a few people and then coming up with a good talk track to convince people that it's been validated, right?
Yeah.
But like, if we're talking about creating an environment around this, like, there seems to be not enough knowledge about how proper validation should take place. And I think probably the best thing you could do from an environmental standpoint to create an environment where you're more likely to validate, create a validation community, a meetup. Like, hey, we're going to do this meetup. It's once a month. It's once a week. And we're going to talk about how you do proper validation, why it's important. If you created a meetup, then you're hitting a lot of these things. It's like, you're teaching other people. You're learning from other people. You're going to have to start practicing what you're preaching at some point. And then you're also surrounding yourself by the five people that you spend time with that are also interested in the same things. So that's my biggest takeaway. I know yours is that you love government. Did you have anything else you wanted to add, Justin? Or
no.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, Ryan.